I feel a bit like an interloper. Yes, this morning in a way, because I've often been around here when you've had these meetings.
Yes.
I never like to push my way in, because
I know
that you're really, in a way, and quite rightly, interested in certain people who, well, can bear some weight and influence in these recordings of yours, but there are many of us here that, we're just ordinary people. As you well know, this is a subject which affects every human being, whether they're high up or whether they're low in this scale of life, you might say.
Yes.
Of course, I was only just an ordinary person, and I suppose what I have to say wouldn't be a very real weight to most people. That is, who might listen to your records, but anyway, I'm very interested, and I often stand here and listen and take an interest in what goes on. And I know as you go around and about and you play these things to people, and it gives a lot of interest and comfort to people, I'm sure.
Yes, it is.
Of course, I never had no truck with this myself when I was on your side. Well, as a matter of fact, I never had any truck with religion as such, except when I was a kid, like most kids. I went to the old Sunday school and learned a few bits and pieces, and never had much sort of influence on me, especially when the First World War, when I joined up and got among the boys, and one thing or the other, and the state of things, I'm afraid, what religious, convictions, they weren't really convictions, of course, but what religious inclination I might have had was soon knocked out of me. I know, remember my reactions very well at the time, the First World War. Oh dear, I thought, well, if there's a God, he'd never permit all this. And as for the church, I thought, well, less said the better. Anyway, still, I've changed a good bit since then. There's nothing wrong in the sense of the church. The point is, they've got a great truth and they've never known quite how to handle it. Or how to sort of, bring it out to the people, to give them that sort of realization, you might say, and conviction that they should.
Yeah.
If you follow the teachings of the Lord, the simple truths that he taught, it'd be an entirely different matter. You can't have the sword in one hand and the Bible in the other, can you?
No.
And yet a good number of them do. Certainly did in the First World War. Oh dear. I'm not saying there weren't good men among them, padres and all the rest of it. Sincere lads, most of them on the younger side too. And they did some wonderful work in their own way, and I have great respect for them. But if you really talk about Christ and what he really meant, what he brought into the world, a wonderful realization of God's purpose, you can hardly associate that with mass murder. I'm afraid that put me right off religion forever. That did First World War.
Please, may we have your name?
Hey?
May we have your name?
Oh, my name wouldn't mean nothing, would it?
My name's
Pritchett.
Pritchett?
Yeah, Alf Pritchett.
Oh, really?
Don't mean a thing.
Can you give us some idea how you passed over and your reactions?
Hey?
Can you give us some idea of how you passed over and your reactions when you found yourself?
Yeah, I came over during the first lot.
Yeah.
1917 or 18, I'm not sure myself now, so some time ago.
Yeah.
What a time that was. God, dear, oh dear. Last lot was pretty grim, wasn't it? As a matter of fact, since I came here, during the last war, I was helping the lads over, poor blighters. Was so down bewildered they didn't know what had happened in many cases. They just couldn't realise they was dead. There they were, 1 minute full of life and vitality and youth, shoved in, terrible conditions, full of hope, thinking and hoping and praying they'd come through it. Of course, they got a blighty one, and here you are. They were over here. Some of them were still under the impression themselves they were still alive. You had a job to make them realise, some of them, that they were really dead. It all happened so quick, and they were blown, you might say, out of one life into the next in a split second, and there they were, as far as they were concerned, still with the same body and still thinking on the old lines and still, in some instances, even carrying on just the same as if they were in their physical body. You see, you can't destroy a man even when you blow him up. He's still the same person with the same instincts, the same thoughts and everything, and he's still carrying on whatever he was doing in some cases. Death, when it's like that, sudden and, I don't say unexpected, because in war you never know, but it's a bad thing. I mean, when a man dies in his bed after an illness, there's a gradual sort of change taking place. He's gradually sort of, unconsciously if you like, sort of preparing himself for a new world. He may not realise that in a sense, but it does give him time to adjust himself gradually to the idea that he's going to leave the earth, and he begins, in a mental way anyway, to make some change. But this business of war or accidents even, where people are suddenly flung out of their bodies, and it's a terrible thing. I don't hold with wars and anything like that. I suppose that's the thing that really gets me, you know, with the church. I suppose I shouldn't be prejudiced, but so many of them, you know, their sword in one end and the Bible in the other, blessing the flags and blessing the ships and blessing the guns and blessing the boys, telling them they're fighting for right and all the rest of it. Anything that takes life, or anything which is premeditated and organized, mass murder, is to my way of thinking, the wickedest of things. And how any Christian as such can uphold it or support it or in any way have anything to do with it is beyond me. I'm of the firm conviction that if the churches really came out with what they know fundamentally is the truth and say that it is wrong and wicked to take life, I don't think there could be wars, quite frankly, because I don't see how there could be. You get all the Catholics and all the Protestants and all the other isms all banding together and saying that it is absolutely wrong and against all the teachings of the church and the teachings of Christ. I don't think you could have a war. I don't see how you could. In any case, when I've seen, as I have, the untold thousands of people that are thrust over here, unprepared, it's the most ghastly thing. Actually, I wish I could do something about it. That's why I feel so drawn to these sort of meetings, in the hope that we might get a bit of enlightenment and truth, realisation, you might say, through to people. That's a real reason why I come. Well, you was going to say something, weren't you, dear?
Well, I was going to ask you, Mr. Pritchard, exactly what your reactions were when you found yourself on the other side. You see, you were flung over suddenly, weren't you?
Me?
Yeah.
One moment I was alive, and I always remember it so well. We'd been under a heavy bombardment practically all day, and I thought to myself at the time, we come through this blotch and we've been lucky, you know. And then we were, in the early morning, we were given the command to go over the top. I thought, this is it, boy, you know. Oh, well, I come out of this lot, I've been bloody lucky, you know. Anyway, I went. I must admit that it took all I got to really get myself over the top. Anyway, I don't like even going into it, except that all I know is that I was running forward, and I still get running forward. And the funny part about it is that some of the Germans were coming towards me, and they rushed past me as if they didn't see me. I thought, well, that's a funny attitude. All I remember was feeling in a pretty bad state, you know, sweating and all, crying out loud, this is it, you know. And there's two of them attacking me, or in any way sort of taking any interest in me. They were rushing past me. I thought, well, good Lord, I make this head at all. And it took me quite a while to sort of realise what had happened. In fact, it was some time, I think, before I realised what happened. I went on, and all I can remember is running and running. I thought, well, they're not going to see me. I'm certainly not going to bother about them. I'm going to try and get in a little cubbyhole somewhere and get out of it. And all I remember is getting into a hole in the ground that had been created by a bomb, I suspect, at some time. Anyway, one knows I got in this hole, and I just crouched down. I thought, well, I'll wait till this shindy is over and hope for the best. I might get taken prison, who knows, I don't know. I was lying there thinking to myself, well, it's so funny how did you do, they didn't see me. They must have seen me, yet they went right past me. And I started to think about it, and I thought, well, I don't know, I'm lucky. And, I don't know how long I must have been there. Anyway, I must have fallen asleep or something, because the next thing I know was that, at the time it was, I remember seeing a bright light in front of me. It was just if I woke up, and there was a very bright light. And I couldn't make this out at all, because it was the sort of light I'd never seen before. It was just as if the whole place was illuminated. And it was so dazzling that for the moment I could sort of hardly look at it. I had to keep sort of closing my eyes and having a look. And I thought, well, I don't know, some sort of trick of the light or something. I got a bit real windy, you know, I didn't know what to think. Then all of a sudden, it's just as if I saw an outline, a shape or a figure appear. And I kept looking and I thought, well, I don't know. I wasn't sure whether it was human or what it was. It was an outline of a human being and it was full of luminosity. And gradually it seemed to take shape, and I was in an absolute sweat, because eventually I could see that it was an old friend of mine who I knew had been killed some months before, named Smart, Billy Smart we used to call him, old Bill. And he was looking at me and I was looking at him, and it was, I don't know how to explain this, it was as if somehow there was a sort of merging, I suppose, of some, in some way or other, of him and me. Most peculiar, I can't explain this. Anyway, all I know is that I felt myself getting up, and that struck me as odd, that I should sort of be conscious of myself getting up in a strange sort of way. I thought, well, here's me been lying here probably all night, all day and night, and I was brought to be feeling stiff and awkward and uncomfortable, but I didn't. I felt as light as a feather, and I thought, well, something's gone to me here, perhaps I've got a whack, you know, something, perhaps I don't know what to think about it. Anyway, I went towards him as if I was being like a magnet drawn to him. And as I got closer, I could see that he was, full of vitality, full of life, wonderful sort of colour in his face. And then all of a sudden, as I got near to him, it dawned on me that he was dead. The funny thing was, when I first saw him, I didn't think of him being dead, although I must have remembered and realised in a way he had been killed some months before. Anyway, all I know is that I was drawn to him and he smiled at me, and I suppose I must have smiled back. Anyway, he sort of held out his hand and I felt a bit daft in a way, because I know it's natural shake hands. It was me in a dughole, a trench, a dugout, whatever you like to call it, a crater in the earth, sort of shaking hands with someone who was dead. And it sort of put me in a cold sweat in a kind of way. I thought, well, I don't know what's going on here, I must be dreaming or something. Anyway, I could hear him speak, and he says, all right, he says, none to worry about, you all right, mate, come on. And it was me putting my hand in, it's just like a kid. I thought, well, this is damn daft, this is something wrong somewhere. Anyway, all I know is I got hold of his hand and suddenly felt a sort of floating sensation. Before I knew where I was, it was just as if I was being lifted up in the air, holding his hand too. I thought, well, this is something, this is reminded me of something I saw years ago, Peter Pan or something. It was me floating up in the air, holding his hand. I thought, crying out loud, this is a funny dream, this is. And there was us, sort of floating. I can't say I was doing anything else but floating, just with a feet off the ground, going gradually higher and higher, as if everything gradually was getting further and further away, and I could see in the distance down below the battlefield, and I could see the guns and the light and the explosions, and the war was obviously still going on. I thought, well, I don't know, this is the most peculiar dream this is. And then the next thing I remember was sort of gradually coming in sight of what appeared to me to be a big city. It was luminous. See, the way I can describe this is as it was luminous, as if all the buildings sort of had a sort of glow about them. This glow, by the way, seemed to be something that seemed to be not only with him, my friend, but with everything. Even when I remember now looking back, there was a sort of haze or glow over everything. Anyway, cut a long story short, I suddenly felt my feet touching ground again, most peculiar, and it felt solid. And I remember walking along what appeared to be a long avenue, and on each side of this street avenue were beautiful trees, and between every other tree or so there was what appeared to be a sort of statue, so anyway, I describe it, figures, beautiful figures they were, sculptures sort of figures, you see. And on the sidewalk, I suppose that's what you call it, or the path, pavement, people were going about, but dressed in most peculiar sort of dress. I thought, oh dear, this is a real corker, this is, you know, a real dream. And they looked like as if they might have been Romans or Greeks or something, like you see in pictures. And beautiful buildings with pillars and beautiful steps leading up, some of them heads, and there were mostly flat roof, by the way. I don't remember ever seeing any roofs and gables like ones associates with England, for instance. They all seem to be what you call on the continental style, you know, sort of beautiful flat roof houses, beautifully designed, and so this sort of glow coming from them. All sorts of people there was, and I saw horses, I saw several people on horseback riding beautiful, magnificent looking horses they were. And anyway, I thought, this is quite a do, this is, you know. And anyway, he was talking away to me. He says, Gush, he says, you know what's happened to you? So I says, what's happened to me? I says, all I know is what's happened or what ain't happened. I'm having a good time here. It's better than being down there in that lot. I should be sorry to wake up. I says, don't worry. He says, you ain't going to wake up. I says, what do you mean you ain't going to wake up? So he says, you've had it, chum. I said, what do you mean, had it? He says, you're dead. I said, don't be so silly. How can I be dead? I'm here. I can see all what's going on around me. I can see you. But I said, I know you're sad. You died some months ago. You've got a packet. But how is it that, I don't know. I've said to you, you may be dead, but I'm dreaming. He says, no, you ain't. He says, you really are dead. He says, you've got a packet in that charge. I said, how get away? How can I have had? I wouldn't be here like this, would I? He says, that's just it. He says, you are here. You're dead. I said, what? I said, you don't mean tell me this is heaven. So he says, well, not exactly, but it's an aspect. I thought to myself, aspect, what's aspect mean? And it suddenly dawned on me, it was a sort of part of, like, you know. Anyway, cut a long story short, we went up this nice, very pleasant road in this beautiful city. And we came to a sort of hill, not a very steep hill, and right in front of me on top of this hill I could see what looked like a beautiful building, like, well, how do I describe it? Something I'd seen in the city of London, only much more white and much more beautiful. And I thought, this is a nice looking place, what was that? So I said to him, what's that place? Oh, he says, you're going there, he says, to meet some of your old friends. He said, that's what we call a reception station. I said, a what? He says, like a kind of an hospital. I said, well, I don't go to any hospitals, there's nothing wrong with me, I'm all right. I said, in any case, I can't get this at all. He says, don't worry, just don't tackle your brain. He says, too much at the moment, it'll come to you later. Just relax, enjoy yourself. I said, well, I'm doing that, all right, it's done, so I better be down there. In a sense, I said, I don't particularly want to wake up. If this is what you say true, I have to believe you, but at the same time I can't make any tale on it. Anyway, cut a long story short, we got to this place, you know, and well, I went in and there was all sorts of people there, all kinds, but what struck me is odd, they were dressed much the same as, well, many people that I'd known, and well, I used to dress up myself in Civvy Street, suits and, you know, that sort of thing. And it all seemed to be very natural. And the funny thing was that the outside of this place looked like a sort of temple place or something, I suppose you'd call it. But inside it all looked very natural, most peculiar. It was not exactly like an hospital, but at the same time it had an atmosphere of peace and tranquility and all that. And there seemed to be many rooms, apart from the big entrance there, there seemed to be lots of different rooms, but lots of light was coming in. That's another thing, I never remember seeing the sun, yet there seemed to be plenty of light. And big windows, and people sitting around talking. There were tables and chairs, and didn't see any beds. And I thought, well, this is a funny sort of an hospital, and yet it ain't an hospital, I suppose. Everyone seemed to be quite bright and cheerful and happy, all very natural. Some were talking and others were eating. That sort of struck me. I thought, well, I've got him one here. He says and says, this is some sort of part of heaven. Surely wouldn't eat. So I said, ah. I said, look, they're eating over there. So he said, well, why shouldn't they? And I thought, well, seems odd. If you're dead, you don't need to eat. So he said, ah. He says, what you don't realise is that when you come here, you feel it's essential to do certain things. And you feel it's essential to eat and drink, and you can. And then it dawned on me, that sounds pretty sensible after all. Because if you put someone in a place where they're out of harmony and things don't go on in the way they would like them to go on, then they feel uncomfortable. So it struck me as something in there. Wait a minute.
Very interesting.
Yes, it's really interesting.
Hey. Mm. Yeah, well, sat down around a table with several other blokes. He says, hello, just arrived. I said, yes. So one of them said to me, only just come, eh? Only a few hours, isn't it? I said, what? He says, only a few hours. I said, is it? I didn't know. So he said, we heard as though as you were coming. So I said, what do you mean, as I was coming? Don't even know me. He says, well, that's what you think. So I said, well, how could you know me anyway? I don't know you. Not down there, as you call it. So he said, oh, well, we know. He said, we have our scouts out. We have our gangs out, you know, help us. He says, I was helped in the same way. I've only been here a very short time myself, a couple of days, I believe. So I said, oh. So I said, settling in. So he says, oh yes, very nice. Much better than what they used to tell us down there, isn't it? So I said, how do you mean? So he says, well, you know what they used to tell us down there about heaven and hell and the last trumpet and all that. Yeah, he says, they got it all wrong. So I says, well, seems like it, doesn't it? So he says, yeah, he says, all that business about if you're very good, you go up to the top store, and if you're not so good, you go down to the old cellar. Ha! He says, they've got all that wrong, mate. He says, here we are, he says, just the same as we was, any better. Yeah, quite happy. He says, tomorrow, he says, I'm going from here. So I said, what? Where are you going? So he says, well, he says, I'm going, he says, to see my grandparents. I says, of course, all this struck me as a bit crackers, but I thought, well, I better call, keep in with them, you know, and talk the same sort of language. After all, if I've got to be here, as they say, I might as well fit in. I felt in the most peculiar sort of state, really, when I come to think about it now. And he says, yeah, I'm going to see my grandparents. So I says, well, where are they? He says, well, I've been told, he says, that they're on this plane, as they call it here, but further out. I says, further out. So he says, yes. So I says, what, many miles away? He says, miles. They say you don't have miles here, you don't have distance in the same way as you do on Earth. I ain't got me at yourself adjusted that yet, he says, but I shall no doubt be all right. I'm being taken there. So I says, oh, very nice. I says, who's taking you? So he says, my guide. I said, guide? So he says, yes. He says, I didn't even know there was such things as guides, you know. That's something that I've only just recently learned. But there's a very nice fellow here. He's like one of the stewards, I suppose you'd call him. And he's found out a little bit about my background and my people, and he's been given a job of sort of escorting me. He says, by the way, he says, did you notice when you came here how odd it was, how light you felt? So I said, yes, I did notice that. He says, wasn't it funny? He says, that sort of floating feeling you had, you know. So I said, yes, it was rather remarkable. I felt a bit peculiar, you know, sort of floating around. It just seemed strange. So he says, well, that's the way we're going, I believe. We're not going to walk, he says, and we're sort of going to, I suppose some people call it flying. I don't know whether you call it that here, but it seems like it. Anyway, he says, I'm going there tomorrow to see my grandparents. And it's funny, he says, I remember the old girl, Grandma. She was about 76, I think, when she kicked, you know, when she pegged out, you know. And he says, I often wonder, he says, if they'll really know me, you know. He says, another funny thing, he says, you'd have thought they'd have met me if they knew I was coming over, wouldn't you? So I said, well, perhaps they didn't know. Perhaps it's only these higher-up ones that have the knowledge beforehand. So he says, well, maybe that. Anyway, he says, that's what's happened to me, my arm again. He says, some of these people, he says, have been here for a long time, I believe. And, you know, and only sort of begin to settle down now. Some are a bit difficult to deal with when they first come. He says, you seem to have taken it all right. So I said, well, what else can you do? He says, we told you, keep you dead. The best thing to do when you're dead, I should think, is to follow out the instructions and behave yourself. After all, you never know who's going to be judging on you and all that. I said, according to what the old Bible says and what I understood, you got judged. He says, he says, get away with that. He says, no one judges you from what I can make out. I think you judge yourself. You sort of, I know, he says, since I've been here, he says, I've been sort of reflecting, you know, going back a bit on the old past and wondering and thinking about things. He says, I realise now, he says, like many people, of course I made many mistakes, I was a bit of a fool, you know, to myself and other people, but he says, I'm gradually beginning to see now, even though I've only been here a little while, he says, that there's no such thing as judgment, not the old-fashioned idea that the old church teaches. He says, the only thing is, he says, you judge yourself. After all, it's your conscience. He says, I've got one. So you are better. We all have. So I said, well, I've got a bit of a conscience, all right, but I said, of course, I haven't lived all that long to have done all that much bad, as far as I know. I said, as far as I can remember, the only thing I ever did really wrong was drowning a cat. I said, I can't think of anything else. And well, once I had a pint of bitter and never paid for it, because there was a crowd in there, and he forgot about it, and I never offered it. I didn't see anything really terribly wicked about that. As far as I can remember, I said, I haven't done anything really bad. I mean, I ain't like some of these people. I said, if the only thing I can think of doing anything bad, if it is bad at all, and it's not altogether my fault, because I was forced into it, it's killed a few Germans. I said, no, I said, you come to think about it, I put them in the same boat as myself. I said, I'm not very happy about that idea, although I realise already that it's not so bad being dead, but after all, perhaps I had a life to fulfil on earth, and for that matter, so did I, I said. But what I feel about at the moment, I said, is the fact that I'm placed in this position. Not that I mind it in a sense, I said, but that other people who really, when you come to think about it, don't risk their lives at all. They sit back and more or less in comfort and smoke their cigars or what have you. I said, we're the ninnies, aren't we? So he says, you're telling me, boys, he said. You don't want to worry about them finances and all the rest of it. They're all right, they'll come through all right. But what good would it do them? What will they have to answer when they get here? You think that one out, he said to me. He said, you've got an angle on your conscience, mate, but my Christ, he says, they've got a hell of a lot on there, and the others that are responsible for putting us in this position. I said, well, I suppose we shouldn't have any bitter feelings, I said. He said, no, he says, I ain't got no bitter feelings. But what he says annoys me and upsets me is that these people are the cause of all this. The mere handful, you might say, compared with the untold millions who have to suffer from they're the ones who are really the ones who've got something on their conscience, and when they get here, I wouldn't like to be in their darn shoes. He says, I said, I can climb to Greenview there, mate. I said, we're rather like the poor old sheep, ain't we? He says, you're telling me. He says, but never mind. He says, it's going to be nice here, I can feel that. He says, I've been here, everyone's been kind and pleasant and helpful. He says, I really feel at home already. And he says, you'll be all right, don't worry. So I said, well, you know, I don't really get all this. I have to accept the fate when I'm dead, I says, but I still find it difficult to believe. He says, well, it'll be all right, I'll pass, you'll get used to the idea. He says, getting used to the idea of being dead comes a bit much at first, but you soon sort of cotton on to it. And it's not bad at all, he says, I'm telling you. You really have everything here that you want, that's essential. Oh, he went on to him, you know, things. And the other popes sitting around, they didn't say very much. I thought, well, they were a bit of a damn lot. But he says, my friends here, he says, they're only just sort of settling in like you. They've only been here a very short time. And it's just before you arrived, as a matter of fact. He says, they're thinking it all out. And they've been worrying, I think, one or two of them anyway. He says, and he looked at them, and they looked at him and me, and everyone staring at each other, you know, and he says, they're a bit concerned about the people on the other side. Cool, and I remember the moment, I said, good God, I said, I forgot all about them. Isn't that terrible to think that, you know, with all this happening, I said, I completely forgot about them. He says, well, they will begin to realise one day, he says, but, you know, they tell me you can go back and see them if you want to. So I says, go back and see them. So he says, yes. And I says, does that mean you become a ghost then? Because that would frighten my old woman out of her life, you know. So he says, well, people say that, but he says, we can go back, you know. So I said, well, I'd like to go back and see my people and see how they're getting on. And of course, I said, I wonder if they've heard about me being dead, you know. So he says, well, they may not have heard yet, you know, how slow they are letting things, you know, telling your relations and that. Besides, he says, if you want to go back, he says, it can be arranged, you know. He says, one of those fellows who's in charge here, he can probably arrange it to take you back. He says, of course, it'll only make you miserable. I should think, because he says, you go back there and they don't take any blind bit of notice on you. Then what? I said, that's funny, you're talking about not taking any notice. I remember at a time, I said, when I went over the top and I was racing with the rest of the boys and was the Germans, I said, the Germans came running past me like mad, they didn't even see me. He says, that's right, he says, that's exactly what will happen when you get back to Earth, no one will see you. They want to take you notice, you can go bang on the wife's door, he said, if you've got a wife, and he says, or you can go and bang on the old parson's door, he won't take a bloody bit of notice on me, because he's as blind as the bat, like the rest of them. So I said, oh dear, it's a bit much, isn't it? Not much point in going if they don't take your notice of you. So he says, well, he says, you wait and see. Take things calmly, mate, you'll be all right. So I thought, well, I suppose if I do some tolls, best way, innit? And in case you've been in the army any length of time, you learn to do as you're told, otherwise you're in for it. So I thought, well, I'm in a funny predicament here, so the best thing is keep your mouth shut and listen and say, little, you know. Anyway, eventually, time came when this friend who'd brought me here came over to me again. He says, I want to show you something. So I says, oh, all right, mate. So I went with him and we went outside and he took me down another street. Little houses there, very attractive they was, with little balconies and flowers and all beautiful flowers. I've never seen such flowers. And he took me down the end of this road and we came out to a big square. It's like a sort of street, square off a street, you see. And there was a big fountain playing in the middle and I could hear music. Oh, it was smashing. Wonderful music, it was beautiful music. And I thought, this is real nice. It reminded me of the old days when I used to sit in the park and listen to the band. But this band was something out of the, well, it wasn't say out of the world, it was. It was magnificent, playing away there, beautiful music. I didn't know what it was, but it's marvellous music. And I saw all these instrumentalists sitting there. And they looked real marvellous, they did. The funny thing is, they hadn't got uniforms on there. They got this sort of robe business on. And I thought, well, that looks very nice, but I might look a bit odd in one of them outfits. But anyway, I thought there was no good thing about that now. And I thought, well, what am I wearing now? And I looked and I was wearing a suit again. I thought, oh, well, yes, that's right. And everything was going on all the same time in my mind. I was proper sort of bewildered. Anyway, we sat down on a little bench and under a beautiful tree, beautiful blossom on it, and I was listening to this music, and I was sort of being really carried away. And my friend said to me, he said, "We often come and sit here and listen to music, it's very pleasant, isn't it?" I said, "It's very nice." He says, "You'll find it very restful." He says, "You just sit there, I'll leave you there for a little while and I'll come back for you." So I thought, all right. So I just sat there and listened to this lovely music, and I really enjoyed that. And oh dear, I am carrying on, and I...
Well, go on.
We like it very much. Very interesting.
And anyway, I was sat there with my eyes closed, sort of listening to this very nice music. And then all of a sudden I had a sort of feeling that there was something, someone sitting next to me. And I looked, and there was a very beautiful lady. She was really beautiful. Beautiful blonde hair she had, fair. Very beautiful. She looked about 19 or 20, and I was really sort of taken back. And she says, she called me by name, that's right. And I thought, well, that's funny, she knows my name, I don't know her. So she said, "Are you finding it all very nice here?" So I says, "Very nice, thank you, miss." So she says, "You don't have to call me miss." She says, "Don't you know me?" So I says, "No, I don't know you." She says, "My name is Lily." So I says, "Lily? I don't know no Lily. I'm sorry," I says, "I don't want to appear rude, but I don't know you." She says, "You don't know me." And yet she said, that's not surprising in a way. She says, "But I'm your sister. I died when I was an infant." Cool, blimey. I says, "I remember my mother says talking about a little girl that died when she was only a few days old or something, if I remember right." I says, "But you can't be her. I says, you're grown up." So she says, "That's right." She says, "I'm your sister. I died when I was an infant, and I've grown up over here." So I says, "Well, beats me." I says, "I'm very pleased to know you, and I feel quite happy knowing you, but still very puzzling to me that you should be my sister, and I never knew her." I mean, so she says, "Well, don't let that worry you." She says, "But I'm going to look after you now you're here." And she says, "You come with me, and I'm going to take you home." I says, "Home?" She says, "Yes, home." So I says, "Oh." Anyway, I went with her, and she took me out of this square, down a very broad avenue lined with trees, and we branched off, and then we went down a slope, and it seems as if we were going outside the town altogether, and we went out into the countryside, down a beautiful country road, and I could see in the distance some small houses dotted about here and there. Gradually we arrived at a small cottage place. About and describe it. It was the nearest thing I'd ever seen, by the way, to, well, cottages and that I'd seen at home in England. And she eventually stopped at a small place in this own little garden with a little gate and a little porch to the door and plenty of lovely flowers again, I noticed. And we went in, and we went into this little place and off this little passageway on the left, I remember, was this little room, all very cosy and comfortable, nice chairs, and I noticed there was no fireplace. I thought, well, that's odd. So I said to her, I said, I see you don't have fireplaces here then. So she said, "No, we don't need fireplaces because it's always warm and always pleasant." So I said, "That's nice, isn't it? Don't get no rain then." So she says, "No, we don't have any rain." But she says, "We have dew sometimes, strange as it may seem." So I said, "Well, oh, that must be nice." So she said, "Yes, it is." Anyway, we sat there talking. She started talking about my mother and my father and a brother that I had still on earth. And she said she often went to see them, and had been going to see them, and me when I was on earth from infancy, and that she had been with me all through the war years. And she couldn't go, well, she wasn't with me when I actually died, she said, but she got everything all ready for me, that she knew I'd be coming and that I'd be brought, and anyway, here I was, and I was going to live with her, she was going to look after me. I thought, oh, this is nice. And I thought, well, I don't know, it's all so strange. Anyway, I settled in and I stayed with my sister. And perhaps I'd better come another time and tell you more about it from that point, you see, because the time, I'm told the time is up, you see.
You're very interesting.
Well, I know, I mean, the point is, I feel that I can't talk to you as intelligently, perhaps, as some of the other people.
It's very interesting.
It might be of some interest to people if I sort of told you these things, you see. Anyway, I'm told the power, whatever you call it, is going, but...
Did you live at Sydney Street, did you?
No, no. I must go, dear. I'm sorry, but...
I can't give a message for you to anyone.
No, there's no one, my own people.
What's wrong?